Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming.
We're just going to get right into it first. Our first reader is Erin Morey. And Erin Morey is a poet and translator from French, Portuguese, Spanish, Galician to English, sometimes from Galician to French or English to French, but much more rarely. Her most recent book of 11 or so is Little Theaters or Teatrinhos, which is out by Anansi in 2005. Her most recent book of someone else's Mtala. Mtala. Okay, kind of did that. is by Chus Pato. And her next book will be O Cadoro, to appear from Anansi in 2007. Erin will be reading a translation. It's a few translations. The broadside that we're selling this evening is a translation of Chus Pato by Erin Morey with art by Vida Simone. So let me tell you a little bit about Chus Pato. She was born in Orense, Galicia in 1955 and teaches college history and geography in the interior of Galicia. In her words, writing metabolizes the world, even that world that cannot be absorbed into writing. And I have a predilection for those constructions which investigate a possible language thinking that refuses to repeat the already written and lives in lamentation with the seams of the unsayable, of what hasn't yet been written into the corporeality of the poem. To me, the poem is a freedom machine. Her work, a number of books, Llorenia, Eloísia, Coruña, and her poetry has also been translated into Lithuanian, German, Portuguese, Catalan. She has given readings all over Spain, as well as in France, Portugal, Argentina, Germany, and in April 2006, we'll be doing a reading tour in Poland. Our artist for this broadside is Vida Simone, a Montreal artist who has exhibited variously in Montreal. Drawings, performances, installations, has had residencies in Canada and abroad, in Finland and Estonia, etc. And with curator Jack Stanley, organizes a performance and art space in Little Italy in a former sewing factory called Souffles. So please, everyone, could you help us welcome Erin Morey?
Thank you, Heather and Kate, and thanks, this is a beautiful, beautiful broadside, and if I can ever find out how to mail it to Chus Pato, she's going to love it. So I was just going to read the broadside and then maybe read a little more by Chus. This particular piece here is called Herg's Monologue, and it's from a longer piece called Thermidor, which everybody knows is associated with the French Revolution and their revolutionary renumbering of the months and so forth. Anyways, this is, the name of her book there, Mtala, she invents all these names for people. Often her characters, these that populate the poems, because her poems are quite theatrical, they all sound like Babylonians on the loose. So they're kind of fun. So this is Herg, who's... if you read the rest of Thermidor, I think she resembles Chus Pato, but anyway. The silence can't be seen. We walk in fields of grass even greener, and below in the weft are lineage of roots. The silence spreads. Of all you who still believe in the power of great narratives and affirm the existence of sacred texts, I have nothing to say. We serve as your bridge and feel your weight in each vulnerable vertebrae because we don't want to die. We're here on the other side, the 5,000 dead men and women of the Free Commune of Paris. We others, those destroyed in the prisons of the Guianas of the tropics, and it all returns to the start again, and we would like to live. The house we share and in which you visit us is another of the cells of terror. Nothing is sacred where we are, not even blood, nothing. Quote, silence. When I type into the computer and jellyfish and dragonflies furrow the screen, or when I rescue from the treasures the presence of friendship, and I realize that from the very start I resisted and violently chucked quicklime and more gobs of quicklime at the wall to ensure that no one could spot the fissures or end of such suffocating narrative. From here, error is visible and acceptable, and the cracks irreparable. That's her. And I was just going to read a few pages from a sequence from her previous book. This book's almost completed, so I'm hoping to translate it. Her previous book's called Charenton, which is the name of the asylum where the Marquis de Sade, of the Peter Weiss play, where the Marquis de Sade put on the play of the death of Marat. Anyways, there's a lot of depth of literary reference in her work, which is not uncommon where she comes from. And this sequence is one that I took. It's called, I've titled it A Certain Edenic or Edenic Condition, and it's going to be published in the 14 Hills Review in San Francisco. Clotho, Orpheus, was he a poet? The Chasis, yes, but he didn't know how to write. He was an oral poet. Paradise, that place for agraphical poets. Are you, madam, a person who writes for other people? No, I'm not a person who writes for other people. Well, so then, who do you write for? I write because language imposes itself on me. As it does on others? Not as it does on all others. Many others don't produce language. This obligation, is it a means of parturition? No, it can simply be gallantry. It presents itself to you as an act of love, or as a passion, as a building might offer itself, a moral act, an ache, a pain. Is its fondness returned? Insofar as my talent permits. You write then for everyone. For everyone, no, not for some, those who decide to accompany me on the adventure. But exactly how does this affability win out? The same way the Duke of Namur prevailed before his love, that is, with the most violent, least natural, and steeliest persistence in the world. Prophecy is a mode of political organization. Revelation is not operative. We were traveling toward an outer space we didn't recognize, and by slim chance, we found the way back. Even then, we were asking ourselves, what weight, what thickness, what rhythm, what cadence? Through the texture of the first words written on leaves of the trees of paradise. Rosy balcony? Dawn. Turquoise curtain? Wave. Glass snake? Stream. Antarctic stars? Heart. Bengali women of the Ganges? Celestial body. Woven snow? Tablecloths. Purple lividity? Marbled transparencies? Intuitive gold? Indian, fable, eastern sea, no paradisical language, no one was speaking, precedes the arbitrary word that claims it is Genesis. Although Mariana, surrounded as she was by all kinds of people, farm women, while waiting in what was once the visitor's area of the city prison, was able to conceive of a certain Edenic condition. She knew they all bore a name, and that by rare historical chance, this name fit with the ancient legal concept of nacio. She felt the weight of wings, curled her body in the red velvet chair, and let her thoughts give way to melancholy. Melancholy leads to discouragement, and yes, true, but also to sure and serene contemplation or drift across waters. She thought about Benjamin and catastrophe theory, about the current state of language subject to the law of supply and demand, like any merchandise, about Baudelairean shock, and how by superimposing the scientific theory of cataclysms onto this shock, it was possible to enter into a litigation, into the possible demands of irrationality. I, communist, am not speaking for you, communists. Given that under current communication conditions, experiences of language just can't be had, and as a result, extension to a catalogue of memories is no longer feasible. It is only through phantasms or regulatory disasters that the muse is possible. Thus, the age of beauty is one interwoven with the figurations of a game, with a time, that of the game, which deliberately ignores any settled position. Although Mariana was able to conceive of a certain Edenic condition, even for naming, she was no bearer of the ancient Roman concept of law. In no way was she trying or intending to recuperate the old aura of words, but rather, she was interested in the unsayable, in the nation, in the poem, in the union, in conflicts of incomplete information, in fractals,
linking a discontinuous and non-rectifiable grammar that produces not consensus, but the unknown, the unexpected. These norms or fluids constitute the so-called eruptive or volcano theory. Empedocles, Empedocles. Mariana obeyed, entering the former cell, which once held up to 40 prisoners, during the three-year war badly designated as civil, today housing two state bureaucrats. She let the agent ink her finger and press marks on paper for renewal of the ID card that would remove from her not only the aura of what had already been expelled, and thus that she thus did or didn't carry, but also her belonging to the political concept of nation as Mariana knew it, the ability to make the political decisions about her true nationality. Mariana gathered compass, book, and fable. The numbers totaled 34 in both directions and went out into the commonality. Utopia the Greyhound, a symbolic dog, leapt incessantly at her feet, scattering players, prescriptions, republic of the ideal future. Adapt your aspirations to our ends or we'll remove you from the game, she heard the agent say. The nation thus declaims its insufficient knowledge, portrays itself without attributes. Diaries, agenda, agendas, all vanish. That's choose powerful.